Welcome to Cryptic Picnic, a podcast where cozy conversations unfold over episodes of intrigue, discovery, and laughter.
Hosted by two ghouls and former co-workers turned long-distance friends, Cryptid Picnic is sure to satisfy your appetite for the strange and peculiar.
The only thing I'm picturing is a tree of penises, so is that the same thing that you're thinking of?
Oh, we will get to some penises, Carla.
Great.
And the tears of a woman are a deception. For they may spring from true grief, or they may be a snare. When a woman thinks alone, she thinks evil. Do not say anything incriminating because you will be on the record. All right.
Do you think we should talk about the weather?
Carla, yes. Oh, yes, okay. I do. Because, well, okay, right now it is in the 60s and sunny where I am at in Kansas City. So it would be a lovely day for a picnic if you didn't live so far away.
I know. My bad. I live so far. It is currently 3 degrees Celsius. It's about 37 degrees Fahrenheit. And it's raining outside currently. So not really a great day to go outside for a picnic, but we'll have one.
But you get to live in another country, so that's, so that's a perk.
Well, welcome to our Cryptic Picnic. I am your host, Carla.
Mm-hmm, and I am your other host. Are we both hosts? Are we both co-hosts? I don't know.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
We're both just here.
Would we be co-hosts or would we be host-hosts?
Hosts with the most, baby. We're like, I don't know.
Ghost hosts over
here.
Yeah.
Ghost hoes. Wait, what?
We're not quite a ghost host that's coast to coast because I live in Sweden and you live in the U.S.
Because you literally live in Sweden and I'm stuck living in Missouri.
But I liked Kansas City.
Kansas City's okay. We do have some, you know, weird stuff going on out here, interesting history and stuff. But you know what we don't have? We don't have a medieval incel who is going to be the topic of this episode.
All right. I think I have to know what you're talking about. I don't remember you sending me this memo.
Okay. Little tiny disclaimer. Is that I am not a historian. I am not a professional. I am, however, someone with a really deep interest in really strange niche subjects that I fall down rabbit holes into. So for this episode, I'm going to talk about Heinrich Kramer, a medieval incel and author of the Malleus Maleficarum. Ooh.
Oh.
Yeah. You ready for this, Carla?
I'm going to be ready.
You're going to be.
I'm as ready as ever.
I'm going to look and Carla like has me muted or something the whole time. Isn't even listening. So let's talk about a medieval incel and a text that he wrote called the Malleus Maleficarum, also known as the Hexenhammer and translated as the Hammer of Witches. Is this sounding familiar? Have you heard of this?
It sounds vaguely familiar. It's bringing back a memory that I have from taking an art history class. We were given an assignment to do research over a subject, and the only thing I'm picturing is a tree of penises. So is that the same thing that you're thinking of?
Oh, we will get to some penises, Carla.
Great. Okay. I think I know where we're at.
So you're vaguely familiar with what is arguably the worst, strangest part of the story. Fantastic.
Nice to know that stuck in my head, that like a couple of things hit the wall and that was what I remembered.
Carla. So yeah, when I said this episode was going to be weird, I mean it. So maybe not entirely safe if you've got some little kids around. Maybe this isn't the episode to play around them. Unless they want a real honest history lesson. So the Malleus Maleficarum was written by a German Catholic clergyman, Heinrich Kramer, who published it in 1486 or 1487, depending on the source. Believe it or not, record keeping wasn't always ideal hundreds of years ago.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, color me surprised. And he is often regarded as the first witch hunter, which isn't entirely true, but he is the most infamous of men who sought to find and destroy witches. For a bit of historical context, for anyone who's not too familiar, a witch back then, very, very different than witches today. The term witch was used specifically for people working in league with the devil, causing harm and misfortune. Today, of course, the term witch is used for many different people in spiritual and pagan communities. I often refer to myself as a witch. So
would you say that he looked like Vin Diesel? Or what was it like? What was his look like? Like, what did he look like?
Think of just a fugly little incel, like just a little incel, sad, miserable, angry, probably didn't get laid.
Do you think he wore leather and had all of the cool gadgets and like knives and stuff, or no?
I think that's probably how he viewed himself in his head. But I think I picture in real life, he was probably a little more sad and pathetic than that.
That checks out.
Yeah. So the Malleus Maleficarum is full of information that is definitely accurate about witches and is regarded as the compendium of demonology. But I want to talk a little bit more about Kramer and his backstory to help explain why he would write such a terrible, awful thing that I'll talk about more in a little bit.
Why was he so bad? Please tell me.
This will be his villain origin story, his Joker-like archetype, if you will.
Oh, gosh. Oh, no.
Yes. So Kramer had a lot of hate for women, or so it seems, hence me calling him an incel. Historically, women were more often linked to witchcraft for a number of reasons. There was a lot of mystery behind pregnancy and childbirth, for example, for much of human history. So that did cause a lot of suspicion to be thrown towards women sometimes. Because when you think about it, we understand, you know, a little horizontal tango can produce a child. But like, how is this thing growing in another person's body? Typically, when women gave birth, it was just with the presence of other women. So they leave, all of a sudden, they come back and they have a literal baby with them. Like, that's a kind of weird, mysterious thing. So this is just one of many, many reasons why we tend to see women as more spiritual and thus tend to accuse women of being witches more often than men.
Yeah, I see that being pretty mysterious too, because if suddenly they have a baby and then the times they don't do that, they're like bleeding.
Yeah.
And they're like, wait a second. These people bleed all the time and then suddenly they don't for a while and then a baby happens, like it just shows up.
Like, that's, you know, like, how do we explain that? We don't necessarily have a lot of like natural logical explanations. So sometimes things did lean a little more supernatural. Another possible theory to add around women being accused as being witches more often than men is that, and this is something I only learned like recently when I was researching the Malleus Maleficarum. So in the 13 and 1400s, a lot of churchmen grew concerned over just how many female saints had been appearing, which made them suspicious of female spirituality. They're like, wait. Oh.
They're too good. They're too good. Oh, no. What's going on?
Surely they're up to no good. So these theologians, or, you know, people who engage in theology, the study of nature and God, they were fearful that women's piety and their devotion and godliness was getting out of control. So some historians believe that this created a more inflamed anxiety around female mystics as they tried to restrict former factors that could elevate a woman to sainthood, because there was too many girl saints, okay? There was too many girl saints.
Oh my God. That is so wild. I can totally see that connection. But yeah, women, they were just like, they were becoming too holy, and that you just, sorry.
And that's a problem. That's a problem. So it was these suspicions in spiritual women, female mystics, what have you, that also contributes to this idea that women, more often than not, could be witches, among a lot of other reasons, but that could be an entire other, like, multiple part series, because that's a big, deep history there.
There was a lot of conspiracy that was in that time, so.
Yes, there was. But back to our medieval incel. So it was around the time that these suspicions were arising with all these female saints when Heinrich Kramer would enter the scene. Kramer was born in the year 1430, and from a young age, his interest in the church was clear. We aren't sure on his age when this happened. Again, like, old-timey disclaimer, record-keeping not always a thing. But at some point while he was still young, he joined the Dominican Order of Monks and became the prior of the order in his hometown. Don't ask me what that means. I don't entirely know, but he's presumably some kind, he's in a religious group and he has an official position within it. I did not grow up in a religious household, so a lot of this is new territory for me when I'm researching it. As he grew up, he would go on to become an inquisitor for the Catholic Church, where his interest in witches and the evil they inflict on the world would grow. Pope Innocent VIII had released a papal bull, which acknowledged...
I'm sorry. His name was Pope Innocent? Innocent.
Pope Innocent VIII. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
It's a little...
For anyone religious affiliated, that's just such a fun name. That there was so much innocence that there was eight different people...
I think, like, most, like, modern-day Catholics can even agree. They're like, oh, no, yeah, like, they were a little messed up. They did some bad stuff. Yeah.
Huh. Most powerful and influential of medieval popes. They had to be the most innocent also. I see.
So innocent. Yeah, oh, great okay. people.
Please proceed. I'm so sorry to interrupt. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're good. Where it's gonna just keep going on a downhill spiral from here. So Pope Innocent VIII released a papal bull which acknowledged the existence of witches and sorcerers, which empowered people like Kramer to find and persecute them. And this takes us to the city of Innsbruck in Austria, aka the possible location of Kramer's villain origin story, according to me, a non-historian. So a local woman, Helena Schubaron, was not a fan of Kramer's when he moved into town and took over the pulpit. She did not like his sermons, and, like, knowing what I know about him, I'm sure they were terrible, and everyone will see why soon. And she was very vocal about her dislike for him and his sermons. She sounded pretty cool. She was described as being and I quote, aggressive, independent woman who was not afraid to speak her mind. So
that made her a witch. Come on.
For Helena. Oh, yes. Witch.
Such a witch. How dare she speak out against such injustice. Like, of course she was a witch. Gosh.
Yeah.
Independent. We all knew.
And a woman? No way. So she would tell people and urge them to not attend his sermons. At one point in the street, she walked past him and allegedly spat on Kramer and cursed him right there in public and said, "Fie on you, you bad monk. May the falling evil take you." Again, everyone will agree soon that she was in the right. Snaps for Helena.
So do you, when you were researching this, did you find that this was an onlooker? Like, somebody from the local paper saw this happen? Like, do you know what your source is for this quote?
I don't, and that's why I'm like, did Kramer say, like, well, she spit on me, but did she actually? That's why I'm unsure, because this was the 1400s.
Interesting.
So, not all, but we do here soon, we'll get to, like, there's, like, court documents and stuff where a lot of these claims are made, and that's where some of this comes from, because there will be a court hearing for this. But first, there was another instance where during one of Kramer's sermons, she allegedly interrupted it and loudly proclaimed that Kramer was, and I quote, an evil man in league with the devil. And of course, Kramer wouldn't have this, so she was then accused of being in league with the devil herself. He pulled an Uno reverse and said, no, you're in league with the devil. But it wasn't just her. 13 others were all accused alongside Helena. And I assume these were also people who didn't particularly like him. What a coincidence. These people don't like him. They're protesting him. And he goes, actually, they're all witches. So that's why.
They're all in a coven. They're all they're all in cahoots together.
Yeah, they're all out to get him. So during Helena's trial, Kramer was laser focused on her sexuality to try and demonize her. I could not find the extent or details of this. I don't know if she was perhaps a little promiscuous. Maybe she had children out of wedlock, or was he just focused on she's a woman, thus a witch? You know, I'm not sure what the sexuality side of this was.
Yeah, she has boobs, so she's automatically
boobies equals witch. Did you not know that?
Evil. Yeah, boobies equal evil. Like, that just makes sense.
Well, yeah, like, as someone with boobies, like, of course, I'm very familiar with this. So, but even the bishop, in response, accused Kramer of presuming much of what he said, which had no proof. Kramer was even urged by others, like another bishop, George Golser, to leave his diocese, and eventually the trials against Helena and others he was trying to accuse of being witches were suspended. It does seem a little bit like a revenge case. These women are attacking me, so I'm going to take them to trial, accuse them of being witches, but it's also possible, like, it's easy with our modern lens to be like, oh, surely no one actually believed that. But there was a strong, very real belief in witches.
Absolutely,
so I guess, it could be possible that Kramer's like, I don't like these women. Like, this woman be so foul, surely she's a witch. So it's possible that he did actually believe this. But either way, he pursued it in court and lost. And this enraged him.
You know, it's probably also something more simple than just these women rejecting him. It's probably like, they wouldn't let me join their quilting club. And now I am so upset.
And he's so upset at these girls.
they wouldn't let me join their club.
The girls were being mean to me. yes, Kramer was very enraged. No one took him seriously. He felt that these evil witches got away with their sin or whatever, and he hated it. It ate away at him. He continued to be weirdly obsessed with Helena and tried to conduct his own investigation into her even after the trial was dismissed. Essentially, he stalked her.
He stalked her. Yeah, yep.
Yep. He would end up being expelled over this behavior, and thus Kramer used his anger and frustration at him being a big old loser, and he left and wrote the Malleus Maleficarum as his revenge.
Penis tree.
Penises everywhere. This book.
I wish you were kidding, but it is insane how much this entire book is obsessed with a male phallic appendage.
Yes. Oh, they blame women for a lot of things relating to the pee-pee. This book heavily demonizes not just witches, but women as a whole. And reading it does feel like reading something an incel would go and write on Reddit. I am not even joking. I'll read some examples of it soon. So the Malleus translates to, because like a little bit on the name, the Malleus translates to like a hammer shape. Maleficarum is the pluralized feminine version of the word maleficus, which refers to someone who has done something bad or wrong, primarily those sorcerers and magicians or witches. So the name Malleus Maleficarum does translate to the hammer of witches, essentially. And Kramer intended for this writing to prove just how evil witchcraft is and to act as a hammer to squash it, I guess. no one can see but Carla, but I did a little hammer motion. He's going to squash the witches. Because he believed that we weren't strict enough about just how bad and evil and much of a threat witches were, and thought that women like Helena should not be able to get away with it. Because in a lot of places, witchcraft and sorcery was viewed as a minor offense. So even if someone was found guilty of it, if Helena had been found guilty of being a witch, they weren't being brutally punished or killed over it like people like Kramer wanted. So I have read most of the Malleus Maleficarum, unfortunately.
Oh, I am so sorry. I just remember, again, this presentation, I just... I can't believe you, like, sat through and read that.
Yep.
That's wild.
I own a modern day copy of it that I got from Barnes & Noble for $12.
Do you think his, like, foundation is still getting money for that? Like,
I hope not.
The foundation of the Hammer of Witches.
Ew, because... I'm like, is this money going to the Pope? Like, who's getting this? Who's getting my dollars? It's really not that long of a book, though. The language, of course, as you can imagine, is a little hard to keep up with at times. Very old-timey medieval talk. It's also super repetitive. I mean, there's whole areas you can skim over because it's like, I've heard him hammer in this point 5 times already. Like, come on, move on. For context, the book is in 3 main sections. The first section is there to, quote-unquote, prove to skeptics that witchcraft is real and is wrong. The second section
just
tells us
by writing it in a book, it makes
yes. It's in a very good book. The second section tells us the harm that witches can cause. A lot of it's penis related. And the third section is a manual for how to investigate, arrest, and persecute said witches. So
that he apparently was so good at, by the way, like,
yeah.
Super great at, so he can definitely write successfully about.
He's such a good author. It was such a fun read. So to kind of like wrap up this episode and really summarize him, and like, I know that like he might not sound like the worst person in the world yet, but that's why I keep saying like, just wait. Okay. So I picked out a few of my favorite parts of the book to share.
Are you gonna do? Are you gonna do ASMR right now? Or are you just like?
It's me, Heinrich Kramer, reading the Malleus Maleficarum.
Please do just like 2 lines of that.
Wait, I can do the little like touching the mic that everyone loves.
Just so seductively as you talk about
penises,
penis trees.
Oh, God. Well, this first one's, I think we're just starting off with some good old misogyny. First off, we have this gem, and I quote, "There is no wrath above the wrath of a woman. I had rather dwell with a lion and a dragon than to keep house with a wicked woman." So that's pretty good.
That's fair.
Fair enough. And then we take a nice big jump to this next one, and I quote, "A woman either loves or hates. There is no third grade. And the tears of a woman are a deception, for they may spring from true grief, or they may be a snare. When a woman thinks alone, she thinks evil."
Is it like a poem? Is he just like writing in
like really
poems?
Edgy, like what an emo 14-year-old boy would write when his girlfriend breaks up with him?
Like, this is what we would find on MySpace in like 2001.
The
tears ensnare me.
When a woman thinks alone, she thinks evil. We were talking about Babos earlier. So here he explains how women are different than men, and a quote, "And it should be noted that there was a defect in the formation of the first woman, since she was formed from a bent rib, that is, a rib of the breast, which is bent, as it were, in a contrary direction to man. And since through this defect she is an imperfect animal, she always deceives." So women are all imperfect and we all deceive.
That's a bit of a... I'm getting a bit of a stretch on that one.
Yeah, a little bit. And I want to note that, like, Kramer didn't, like, invent some of this. Like, this idea that, like, women are imperfect and lesser than men because we were formed of them. Like, he ain't the first one to spout this nonsense. Another great part of the book states, and I quote, that witches who are midwives in various ways kill the child conceived in the room and procure an abortion, or if they do not this, offer newborn children to devils. So witches are just offering babies to the devil.
Oh my gosh, did this turn into the Conjuring movie where like...
This definitely happened, everyone got along. This definitely happened. So now let's get to some penises, shall we? Like, my favorite part is, well, okay, and I guess like real quick, like that previous one about you know, childbirth, that does also kind of tie in with that like mystery I was explaining earlier of childbirth and how suspicious it was, and how, you know, to a man potentially, or maybe other women, it's like, why did this baby die? Like, this can be used to explain stillborns. Like, were these women witches? Did they kill the baby?
They steal my baby's soul?
Yep. So that's a little sad tie-in, but just as a means for them, you know, these men, to try and explain, well, why did my child die? So this next one, we're getting to penises. and I quote, how, as it were, they, witches, deprive man of his virile member. And in this section, he talks about how witches cause men to have limp willies, if you will.
The fact that the entire second section is about men's penises and like the obsession that is around the fact that it's someone else's fault is just so ironic on so many levels.
It's a lot of penis talk in this book. It also in this very fine book, this isn't the penis tree. I'll have to go back sometime and try and find penis tree.
Yeah, no, but you know what I'm talking about with like the giant illustration of like penises and like women dancing around and like penises on the tree.
And that is close to a little blurb that I did save for this. And I quote, and this is all very factual and real, everybody, so buckle up. And I quote, witches collect male organs, penises, in great numbers, as many as 20 or 30 members together, and put them in a bird's nest or shut them in a box. They move themselves like living members and eat oats and corn, as has been seen by many.
I feel like if I had a little bouquet of penises, I would just like tie it with a bow and stick it in a vase. Like, why am I hiding it away?
But you're supposed to feed them oats and corn, Carla. Witches, we all have our penis farm and we feed them oats and corn.
It sounds like, do they lay eggs too? What is happening here? Like, do you know what I, like, do they sound like chickens? Like, they're just gaggling around, like, boop, 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 blap, 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 blap.
Yep, that's it. Oh, my God. Yeah, so this is all so true and accurate. Oh, my God.
Actually, I do think it was very accurate. There's like, a whole plot point in Sabrina, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I need to rewatch that.
They, capture the bird in the bird cage, and it causes, like, the men to be... like impotent
evil witch laugh. It's definitely women that are causing this
in a completely fictional show.
Yeah. Oh my God, the fact that like this is like that stuff like that in the show has historical like context behind it is like, oh no, you know. Yuck. It's so easy to romanticize the past, and of course, like, you visit a castle, like a medieval castle, and you're like, oh my God, I would kill to have lived here back then. And then you read stuff like this, and it's like, actually, no. Actually, no, thank you.
Actually, I have a gaggle of penis chickens just like right outside in the coop. Like, yeah. Let's go.
Oh my God. And you gotta feed them oats and corn. And that's a healthy diet. So we're really doing our part here. In the last section on the book, on how to decide what kind of torture you should do with an accused witch, Kramer notes that witches cannot cry. So if a accused witch starts crying, she's innocent. But then he notes that witches will also sometimes smear their face with spit or something to make it look like they cried. So how can you distinguish the two? And this is like a whole thing he dives into because he truly believes that witches, I guess, can't cry, which is really silly because...
I'm sorry, didn't we just talk about like the emo 2001 MySpace boy that was like talking about how when women cry, it's like a snare of deception. So I'm like, wait, are you contradicting yourself in your own book right now?
And then it's like, oh my gosh, there's like a part in here in the book where it talks about how when you are... when you have like detained a suspected witch, when you're essentially torturing her and stuff, trying to figure this stuff out, you have to be really careful to not so much as touch her, because even so much as a touch from her, she could do something to enchant you or curse you or something. And so it's like, if you think she's that powerful that with a mere touch she can get full control over you, don't you think she could like conjure up some like actual tears from her eyeballs? None of this makes sense. No surprise. None of this makes
sense. No, she's like just powerful enough that she can't cry.
Yeah, like, she's like, I can look at you and put a curse on you, but I can't cry. Like,
she's literally stealing people's appendages from their bodies and keeping babies. Them as pets.
Yeah.
But she can't cry.
But they cannot cry. And then it's like, okay, you have an accused witch and she's sitting there crying. And then these men are like, well, she might have put spit in her eyeball and is faking it. It's like, oh, ew. My God. So you can't win with them. And this is why so many accused witches confess and say they are, even though they aren't, because it's the only way to get this torture, poking, prodding, being bound, and it's the only way to get it to stop. So
that is just, it's so wild. That's so wild.
We love it so much. And it is really easy to like laugh at a lot of this stuff and just like brush it off as being absurd. But like a lot of people suffered, a lot of women especially suffered because of the Malleus Maleficarum. You know, like, which is feeding oats to severed penises. It's inherently funny, but then it's like, oh no, but like people actually believed this and like hurt women over it. Ugh, yikes.
Well, and I think that that's also a little bit of a reflective, almost a mirror of some things that are happening now in today's society of some conspiracies happening that just seem so wild in some ways that people are definitely full believing in with their entire being and willing to subject other groups of people to harm because they believe it so deeply.
Yeah, so. I mean, I just the other day, I kind of made a little bit of that equivalence because I let's talk about Britney Spears real quick for a hot second.
Ooh, all of these that could be its own episode. I know.
All these conspiracy theorists who are like, that's not the real Britney Spears. It's AI or a body double or something. And I look at them and I'm like, how are people believing all of this? And then I look back and I'm like, wow, times really haven't changed. Like, these are the same people that would have been like, that woman's an evil witch. Like, times really, they've changed a lot, but also in some ways, like, they haven't. Like, there are definitely people out there that believe in really, like, for most of us, just totally unbelievable, unfounded things. And it's like, oh yeah, like, no, people absolutely back then did also believe witches were this real dangerous threat. So moving on and nearing the end of this story, we're almost done. 30 minutes in, we're almost done. By 1490, so just a few years after the Malleus Maleficarum was written, the rest of the Inquisition did denounce Cramer, with the rest of the church as a whole largely disregarding what he wrote. Although they did say, like, yes, we believe witches and sorcerers are real and can be a threat, they found Cramer to be inconsistent with the true Catholic doctrines on demonology. So, you know, did the church believe in witches? Yes. Did they commit murder and harm people? You betcha. But for other inquisitors, and for the Catholic Church almost as a whole to see what Kramer was writing and to go like, yeesh, like that's a little much. You need to stop. That's how you know how bad it was, because they were no saints themselves, but even they saw the wrong in Kramer. For other inquisitors to be like, no, this guy's taking it too far. Like with what he's saying, the way he's demonizing women and their behaviors, these allegations he's making for how to identify a witch. If you ever have a little free time, you can read most of the Malleus Maleficarum online for free. I recommend giving it a little skim, because I know I only gave a few little excerpts from it, but it's a joy. Kramer in the year 1500 would be appointed as inquisitor elsewhere, I think by Alexander VI. He spent the next few years still fighting his cause against witches, but he would die in 1505. He was about 75 years old when he died, so he lived way too long, if you ask me.
Oh my
And unfortunately, he left a legacy, because centuries later, in other witch trials throughout history, for example, the Salem witch trials, which I'll definitely like love to talk about sometime on the podcast, we would see reflections of his influence in those involved in persecuting witches in Salem, who would sometimes still cite the Malleus Maleficarum centuries later in persecuting these women. Truly a terrible piece of writing written by a terrible, sad, angry little man who got really triggered and upset when he took women to trial that he didn't like and he lost.
He couldn't join their club, okay?
Nope. People didn't like him, so he got real upset and wrote a terrible book. And that, our dearest listeners, is the Malleus Maleficarum and the terrible guy that wrote it. I had quite a few sources for this, so they will all be linked directly below in the show notes for this episode, so feel free to check that out if you want to keep reading about a terrible guy and a terrible book. I'm giving Carla two thumbs up. Yeah.
As always, thank you for listening. We invite you to post some of your own fascinating folklore or delicious recipes for a treat in the comments. If you leave us a scary or a silly review wherever you listen to your podcast, it really helps us. Follow us on all socials. We are Cryptid Picnic Podcast on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook.
You can also follow me on my own Instagram at it's Ivy Boyd and TikTok at Ivy_Boyd. I promise it's a good time for even more spooky content. And join us next time for another installment of Cryptic Picnic, where we will bring you more stories of intrigue, discovery, and laughter.
Join us or else.
This podcast is researched, produced, and edited by both Ivy and Carla. Music is by Dimitri Terrace from Pixabay.
Now it's time for a reel of delightful mishaps and unexpected moments. Let's dive into some bloopers.
So just like a total question, I know we're recording, but like, should we put that in our like edit when we are typing up our audio boom? Like, hey, by the way, maybe not safe. Not safe for kids.
Yeah, maybe one to not play around young kids.
Maybe not safe for some adults. Like,
if you don't want to hear about weird witchcraft stuff and penises, this is not the episode for you.
So when I laugh, like, does that sound weird? On like, when you okay, good. Okay,
it just sounds like a like we're just gonna cackle. I really wish, I'm so envious of men that have deep voices that can do like a real deep villain laugh.
Oh yeah.
No, that's not it.
You almost sounded like Santa Claus. That is not the direction we were going in.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, everyone. Welcome to Cryptic Picnic.